Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. However you're listening to us, we thank you. We appreciate you. Today is Tuesday, May 5th. Happy Cinco de Mayo for all of those that are celebrating it. Wondering what happened to the audio clip, Chuck. Well, I guess we'll get to that a little later. We are back and we're here to update NBA playoffs, talk all NBA. A lot of things are happening. Maybe we'll mention the fight that just went down as well over the weekend, Mayweather-Pacquiao. But just to start it off, NBA, I guess the top of the news besides these games is we now have an MVP who is Steph Curry. I guess the number, you know, the number one question is, do we have any, see any issues with this, him being MVP? Was your vote elsewhere, Chuck? How did you feel about the crowning of young Steph?
Well, I think you can agree that I've been pro Steph Curry being MVP for probably 80% of the season. I feel like there was maybe a stretch at the beginning and maybe a stretch toward the middle where I thought either Anthony Davis or Russell Westbrook had played significantly better than Curry and should be in the MVP talk. But I think when you look at the totality of the season, he was the MVP. And it's not just about him being the best player on the best team. I just think if you look at how much he meant to the Golden State Warriors and how good of a team that they have become is in large part due to the play of Steph Curry. I forget the stat, but it's something like he sat out 15 fourth quarters, something crazy like that. So even if you look at how, not just his numbers, but the efficiency at the rate at which he was doing it, I think there was no doubt, and at least in my mind, that he was sort of the MVP and sort of by, not a clear MVP, but sort of, there was a little bit of difference between him and Harden, because I had Harden in that second. So, yeah, I have no problem. I think he was well-deserving, and I think he's continuing to prove it throughout these playoffs.
I mean, I totally agree, though. At one point, it did, you know, Rusty was picking up. Harden was doing his thing, so it was more so at least a three-man race, if you're excluding Anthony Davis, but... just overall, the season, it just felt like Steph Curry was the most valuable player. You know, what's interesting is people would argue that, oh, Steve Kerr, he shouldn't get the Coach of the Year because he has such a good team. And then they'll argue, well, Steph Curry, he shouldn't be MVP. He has so many good pieces around him. And it's kind of like, well, there has to be a leader somewhere, you know. it doesn't, you know what I mean? Someone will argue that the Hawks are a good team, but no one could take that final shot or who you give the ball to. We know that with Golden State, you give the ball to Steph Curry, and if, you know, obviously if he's having an off night, you give it to Klay. But there is no question of who's the guy that's running that train there. I think Steph Curry, he's the guy that makes it go. So, and all season long, it's just incredible to watch. League pass, things of that nature. You were just, you know, glued to your seat when you were watching the Warriors. They had at least like an 11-game lead over the West before they eventually just, you know, took the West and became the number one seed. So, yeah, I didn't really think it was too much competition. I think more so, you know, people would try to get for a reason for him not to be MVP, which makes for a good discussion, but overall, he is MVP, the best player this year, totally did his thing, and congratulations to young Steph Curry. As we move on, Chuck, I guess we'll stick with the Warriors here. There are some undefeated teams in the playoffs right now. One who was the Cavs, but lost last night to the Bulls. We'll get to that in a second, but The Wizards and also the Warriors just haven't had a loss yet. Those both teams play today. The Wizards play at 7 Eastern time. It's about 6:45 now. So that's about – oh, actually, they play at 8. So I guess I got a little time for that. And the Warriors play after. Chuck, do you see both of these teams staying undefeated?
I definitely see it more so for the Warriors. I think, and I don't think it's more so because the Warriors are just that much better than the Grizzlies. I think with Mike Conley out due to his facial injury, they're just not the same type of team, so they don't provide that same type of threat. And if you look on the other side and how many options, like you were just talking about, that the Warriors have, it just all makes sense that they would go undefeated. They would continue on their run. And to add to that, I think Steve Kerr, right now he's tied for fourth or fifth all time for a rookie coach to begin to start a NBA playoff without a loss. I think he's at 5-0. Pat Riley holds the record at 9-0. But I think the more intriguing question, however, is the Wizards, because I don't think anyone before the playoffs said they would have swept the Raptors. And then if you watch Game One, I caught a little bit more until the end. But I was keeping up with the whole game, and from what I could tell, the Wizards seemed to not be getting handled, but seemed to be having to crawl back into that whole game, and all of a sudden they were able to take control and win. And for a team that is very young, their starting backcourt is under 25. They just have a lot of, I feel, young, gritty players who sort of don't know no better. And on this type of stage, I don't think the idea of undefeated is still is even resonating with them. And then you add on top that they are the underdog. I think if you look right now of all the teams left in the playoffs, them and the Hawks would probably be considered the two teams that are most likely underdogs. So when you have that chip on your shoulder as well, I think they can keep playing and keep playing at a very high level. I do see them losing before the Warriors lose, but the Hawks, like we just talked about, they don't have that it player or that go-to person at the end of games. So these games keep coming down to the end and keep getting close. I can see the Wizards pulling out a few, maybe even tonight, pulling out another one where we look back and say maybe they shouldn't have won that game. But because they're just playing at such a high level right now, they'll come out with a victory. So I'm going to lean towards the Warriors to stay undefeated, but the Wizards are playing just as well.
Yeah, but I have to agree with that. Same sort of area you're in. If I feel like the Warriors are going to win tonight, I think they're going to win at 5. Memphis gets a game off of the Grindhouse. And just, you know, a respectable win. But, yeah, I think both teams can win tonight. Like you said, though, being undefeated, I'm sure, isn't exactly in their mind. They just want to win these series, you know, one by one. But the more likely team would seem to be the Wizards, seeing that, just like what you said, they've had to – sometimes found themselves having to catch up in games, you know, falling behind a little too early and doing a little catch up. But even so, when they do that, it sort of ignites the fact that they don't want to let that go because they just, you know, saw the lead. But they have to come out to a quicker start, a faster start. Loving what John Wall's doing. Bradley Beal leads the team in scoring. But, like, the Warriors, they're just incredible. Like, I mean, I don't see how Memphis can even really hang with them. It's just Memphis is a good team, but when you're going up against a great team and one that shoots the lights out and they're able to shoot threes, I mean, you're just going to have a hard time. Memphis has had a hard time. In the regular season, Clay averaged at least 30 points on Memphis, so it's going to be tough for them, so I don't see them doing much. But yeah, I think neither team escapes out of here with still undefeated, escapes out of the series undefeated. But I think both teams, Wizards and Warriors, will advance. And as we move on, Chuck, we're going to stick with the Cavs. Last night, the Cavs game. Overall, just what were your thoughts? The Bulls ended up winning. LeBron scores 19, which is clearly not enough. Iman Shumpert outscored him. So I mean, what do you think just watching the game, Bulls and Cavs, Chuck?
My first initial thought when watching the game was, wow, the Cavaliers need Kevin Love. And it wasn't like people keep comparing Kevin Love to Bosh, and I get it. It's very easy to do. It's very lazy to do. But I don't think they sort of equate, because even though they sort of do the same thing, they're the four-man who's a stretch, who wants to shoot from outside. Chris Bosh was always much more of a banger. I don't know if that's a good or proper term to use in Miami, but he always was just much more active. There's times throughout the season that I watched Kevin Love and he just wasn't active. He didn't seem to go after and chase boys like he would in Minnesota. I don't know why. I don't care to speculate. It's not my business. But it just didn't seem he had that same type of tenacity that I even saw Bosh had at times in Miami. And the second thing that just jumped out at me was that LeBron can't do it on his own. Like, I keep hearing people talk about, oh, it's LeBron and Kyrie's series to take over now. But Kyrie had, what, 30 last night? LeBron had 19, 15, 9, and 3. Now, I saw his quotes after the game who said that he personally said he didn't have a good game. He wasn't efficient. But why wasn't he efficient? It was because Jimmy Butler, Joakim Noah, the Bulls were very big. They threw multiple bodies at him. They made the game difficult for him. How many times did we watch the game and I was screaming, travel, travel, travel? And I remember late in the game they did call that one travel on Jimmy Butler, on LeBron, when Jimmy Butler was checking him. And I think that's sort of what's the difference in this game and in this series, is that Jimmy Butler is clearly what Chris Webber said, he may be the best two-way player in the league right now. I asked you about that and you said no, it's still Klay Thompson, but he's definitely in the running for a guy who makes it difficult and is going to challenge LeBron on defense. So LeBron doesn't get a chance to pass and just play the passing lanes anymore. He actually has to be a legitimate defender. So you take all these different things into account, and I just think that it's a different. This team is not the Miami Heat team that people want to sort of try to compare it to, and I think that's really going to hurt them. And don't be surprised if this Bulls series is a lot quicker than they think.
Yep. Just watching the series, there is something to the whole Jimmy Butler, LeBron thing. He makes certain guys make you work harder on defense. That's just how it goes. And LeBron is going to have to just do more because Kevin Love is not playing. J.R. Smith's not there for another game. So, he's going to have to just step it up overall. I don't know if they'll win game two. I don't say it's a must win just yet, but, it seems that it's going to be a competitive series. I don't see them going away just like that as far as the Cavaliers, but it's definitely going to be a tougher series in Boston. So these guys, I'm just really looking forward to watching more games in this series and seeing guys play. But like Kyrie dropped 30, but Derrick Rose just looked good, man. I mean, I feel like that's the biggest turnaround, the fact that Cleveland is now who at one point this year, not too long ago, just felt like they were the team to beat, and D Rose was down and Noah was banged up, things of that nature. But now the script is turned, and now the Cavs are missing Love. They're still missing Virgil. J.R. Smith is not playing. You have to bring these other guys in. not necessarily out of their comfort zone, but when you're starting Mike Miller, it's not in, you know, in the second round of playoffs, not a good thing in 2015. So you have that, and the Bulls are healthy. Suddenly D. Rose just looks well, and Jimmy Butler is here to play, and obviously you don't need Noah to be that much of a deal. I mean, obviously he's still going to be that ha-ha Rari guy and, you know, play good defense. But offensively, you don't need him because you have Gasol, and Gasol's going to do his thing. So they're pretty much healthy, and it's a it's like the Cavs kind of lost, you know, it's a little bit of luck. Sometimes you get good luck, sometimes you get bad luck in these playoff runs, and they're getting the bad luck, and it seems like the Bulls have fallen into some good luck. As we move on, speaking of good luck, bad luck, Chuck, I don't know about this series. Clippers and Rockets last night, as I'm watching the first half, the Rockets are playing pretty good basketball, looking like they are at least a better team for this night on May 4th. But with no CP3, suddenly the Clippers just turned around, came back in the second half, fought back. And they beat this Rockets team in Houston to take a 1-0 series lead without Chris Paul. I mean, how did you look at this game, Chuck, and how did you feel about it?
Well, to me, it was turnover. Like, I think sometimes people try to overcomplicate the game of basketball. It's one of two things. A team that is able to hit the most shots, play the best defense, and not turn the ball over. It's really that simple sometimes. And the Houston Rockets just could not stop turning the ball over. And I know people are going to say, how do you lose to a team without CP3? Well, Blake Griffin is playing out of his mind. If he's not the best player so far in these playoffs, he's second to Stephen Curry. And he recorded his back-to-back triple-double, second triple-double in a row. He just took over the game at points. And I'm not amazed, but sort of like, finally, this is the Blake Griffin that I think some of us or a lot of us have all been waiting for. This a freakish athletic guy who can put it, who when he puts it all together, you would think is, if not the best power forward in the league, top 10 player in the league. So I just think that the way that the team is sort of moving, I called him Pop because of Austin Rivers, but I think Doc needs to get more credit, especially with the moves he's making. Like, people keep talking about, why is he playing Spencer Hawes? Well, obviously, Big Baby Davis is giving them solid minutes. You know, they're finding ways with a short bench or basically a non-existent bench to find points, find minutes, find whatever they need to win games. And to the point about Austin Rivers, Austin Rivers had, 17-3? He had, 17-3-4 last night. And people are going to look at those numbers, sort of say, maybe he got a lot of those points late. He was pedestrian-like. He just did okay. But at one point in the third quarter, if I recall correctly, he had, 10 points or seven points in the quarter. So the thing is, he doesn't have to be Chris Paul. He just needs to be able to give them an offensive spark. The same way Matt Barnes doesn't have to be Klay Thompson in the two guard. He just needs to be able to give them an offensive spark. And if they can find ways to do that, and Blake Griffin is going to be the best player on the court, they have a legitimate chance of winning this series without CP. And if CP comes back, they should be the favorite.
Yeah, I've been saying, obviously not on the show for a little while, but just through the grapevine, this is the best Clippers team that I've seen. In the previous years, I did not take them seriously as a contender. I knew that they would either get bumped in the first round or second round, or maybe, you know, reach a conference finals, but they haven't done that. And I just understood that they were sort of a flawed team, and a lot of that had to do with their two big men and Blake Griffin and his ability to close. But lately, Blake, I totally agree with you, Chuck. I don't even think it's a question. But I won't say Steph because, I mean, they just ran through, you know, this AC that wasn't. I don't think the Pelicans are that good. I mean, they got in. Kudos to them. But you know, whatever. So I think Blake Griffin has been the best player in the playoffs so far, consistently on a night-to-night basis. Even when he's taking those losses in game one, he still performed very well, either, you know, near a triple-double. It's amazing to see. It's interesting to watch. You know, besides a couple boneheaded plays late last game, last series, the Clippers really outplayed the Spurs. Spurs caught some good luck, like that Blake turnover. Obviously, the Spurs blew them out one game, but then there was another game that was pretty close. It came down to a turnover or something of that nature. So, you know, Blake has been doing his thing. Matt Barnes has played very well in that game 70. He's just hitting those threes. And when I watched that game last night, you know, the Rockets were playing well, and then it just seemed to, like, hit. And maybe they thought, like, it was a February game or something, like middle of the season, but – no, I don't know. They seem a bit lazy, if you will. James Harden converted back to his old self on defense. I thought Dwight played well, but overall, they're going to need more out of Harden. Seemed like he was a little, I don't know, I'm reading body language, but, you know, he wanted that MVP, didn't get it, whatever. But it wasn't a good performance by the Rockets. They let one down, and it was a little bit, you know, I had to, like, step back and really, you know, understand that they lost this game. And it seemed because they didn't really, they weren't focused for a full 48 minutes. So, you know, all well, it's tough luck there. The Clippers are up 1-0. I think they are the better team right now. They had to just endure this tough series and, you know, go through the certain things that they've gone through. That builds character. That's how teams take the next step. You know what I mean? And I don't think Houston has done that yet. The next step for them was just winning a playoff series against a team that beat them last year, but without Wesley Matthews, the James Harden stopper. So you got to show up, Houston. You're down 1-0 now. I guess game two is tomorrow. Well, Blake has been showing up every game so far. Like you said, if Chris Paul returns, they do seem to be the favorite. The team that they played last, the Clippers played last round, though, the Spurs. I see this in the outline, Chuck. Is it officially time to ask if the Spurs are done? No, I don't think so. You know, we have to obviously, Tim Duncan is the staple. He's the main guy. I don't know what he's going to do. We don't know what he's going to do, period. I believe Tony Parker's still under contract. It's Mono's last year of his deal, or his contract is expired. I really don't know, but I think that they could still be, you know, in the position that they were last. I mean, just this past year. I mean, once they lost to the Pelicans in the final game of the regular season, they put themselves in a bad spot. You had to go up against this young Clippers team who were just hungry and wanted it just as much as you guys seem. So I wouldn't say that their run is done unless Tim Duncan announces a retirement. But, I mean, Chuck, what do you think? What do you say about it?
No, see, earlier you said that for the most part you thought that the Clippers outplayed the Spurs. And I sort of felt differently. I sort of felt that it was an even series all the way throughout, and each team had a blowout between the first four games. Each team had a blowout. Each team played close. And then the last three games were just monumentally great. But the difference for me was Thiago Splitter. When Baines came in the game for the Spurs, you saw a complete drop-off as far as production goes. At this point, Kawhi is the superstar on that team. Kawhi, if it's not the best player, is the most all-around or the most important player. Tim Duncan, like you said, he's the stable piece. He's the foundation to this team. And if you're right, if he comes back, I don't see how they don't, you know, get close. If they don't win 50 next year, they win 45, they get close and they're back in the playoffs. But the issue I have is, how long are these other revolving pieces, because I've seen Kawhi get better. I have faith that Tim Duncan has always been able to sort of tailor his game to whatever time or who he's playing with. But my thing is Manu, Ginobili. Manu, Tony Parker, are they both still going to be able to play at the level they played at last year that was able to push them over the top and win a championship? Because Patty Mills is great. Boyce Diaw, another great, fine role player, a guy who knows his position on the team, knows what he means to the team. But they aren't Manu and Tony. They aren't, quote-unquote, the big three or stars of this team. They're role players. And I don't know if you can win, if you can consistently win at the level that they're accustomed to winning when you don't have your other two star players being stars. Now, if someone can show me that Tony Parker was hurt, he's going to be a lot better this year. Manu, you know, he was rusty, whatever, he's old. Give him one more hurrah, and Manu will be good. Then Manu will be good. Then I say, yeah, they're not dead. But if you're banking on it being Tim Duncan and Kawhi as the reason as to why I believe the Spurs and throw a pop as the reason why I should still believe in this team, I'm hesitant. I'm going to say they have to show me first. And people are going to say, well, with a track record like this, why would they have to show you? Because this is a different NBA. This is a point guard-driven league where, well, if we look at the teams that are still in the playoffs, I would say that these are some of, if not the best point guards, the elite ones, minus probably Russell Westbrook not being in the playoffs right now. So I just think as the game is evolving and it's sort of and different things are happening, I don't know if they're keeping up, and I don't know how they change that in the off season, because they still have Kawhi, they still have Timmy, but what about Tony and Manu? And I think those are bigger issues than I think people are even looking at right now.
Right, I feel what you're saying. I think obviously, you know, those are two big pieces, and there are questions surrounding them. But I don't forget that Manu, just this past year, is coming off or after the finals, they won, had a surgery on his knee. You know, I mean, that affects the play this upcoming year. They've been the two straight finals, were attempting to go to their third straight. You know, that takes a toll on these old guys. And Tony Parker, I've seen him, you know, deal with these injuries. It feels like year after year, but he usually is ready or prepared. You know, during the playoff times, looks much better. I thought he did for a little while this year, but it wasn't as consistent as it needed to be. So, you know, I just feel that, yeah, I feel obviously Manu's contract is up. You bring him 1 year with a player, a team option. You know, Tony Parker, he's healthy. You know, these guys finally have the rest of May and June to, you know, really relax, and they haven't had that these past 2 years. So I think that's going to help them if Tim Duncan comes back. And, you know, you got to re-sign Kawhi. But if they get that done, I think Manu's going to play better next year, and I believe Tony Parker will show signs of being his old self and back in the same spot. It's about playoff basketball. It's about how they're going to get it done if they're in this situation next year. But what I will argue, though, is they're a double clutch. Falling down shot, a bank shot from CP3, that misses, you know what I mean? We're talking about how they're playing the Rockets right now and the Spurs. It's still incredible how they're going. So, you know, I'm just going to want to pump the brakes, let these guys decide what they're going to do, especially Tim Duncan. But I feel, yeah, they could be in this exact same position next year to advance to the second round or to be bounced. But they are a playoff team in the West and consistent, and I see them getting there next year. Chuck, let's do some quick takes real quick. LaMarcus Aldridge, you see him back in Portland next year?
No, bank on this. He goes to a big market team, and I'm one to say the Knicks.
Okay. What about Rondo? Where do you see him?
Rondo to the Lakers. Only reason why Rondo will get double digits millions for this year is because the cap is going up. Other than that, he will be a mid-level exception.
Okay. Kawhi, do you see him back with the Spurs or elsewhere?
I think this is probably the biggest one that I don't think anyone knows. From what I think I know of Kawhi, he comes back. I don't know if he wants to be a max player or not, and I think that's the most interesting thing to see here.
Okay. I guess I would ask you DeAndre Jordan, but that series isn't over yet, so I'll leave that to be. What other looming free agents are out there that got bounced already or didn't make the playoffs?
Kevin Love out back in.
It's Kevin Love out back in. My personal take is he does, after his injury, tries to win one, and the cap goes up the following year. What would you say?
I think he does, but not for actual winning purposes, but for money purposes, because I believe that whether he if he opts in, his contract will be valued, I think, at somewhere around $16, $17 million, and that will probably be what he would get on the open market. So I think he waits a year, shows that he's healthy, he's still a player, gets his money, then gets a stupid contract in 2017.
Yep, I could definitely feel that for the boy Kevin Love. I think that's all as far as the free agents I can think of off the top of my head. Chuck, that is it for today. I guess we'll come back soon and update the playoff race. IMP, he is Chuck, and we are out.